How very curious.
Welcome. It's Friday, July 12th, and this is Two Guys Without a Clue. I am Catatonic Cat, here with Dragaroo.
Hello,
how are you?
Catatonic Cat.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing fantastic.
We have a very special guest.
We do.
Would you like to introduce him?
I'm excited about this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who is the guest?
It's a man who needs no introduction.
It's me!
Welcome, Boss Bretta, I believe. Is that what we're going with?
Sure, Boss Bretta.
You can ask me. I mean, you guys make all the executive decisions, so.
You actually think that we have a plan here?
No, but.
Yes,
I thought you'd make it up.
Boss Bretta, he has been. Talked about in many, many podcasts.
Indeed.
And
so it's a real honor to have him on the show, by
yes.
the way.
Oh, well, I mean, he's a busy man. He has a lot of things going
it's
on.
It's not an honor to be here, I'll tell you that much.
Don't you like our closet?
Mm. Well, there is a small streak of light coming in, so that's something.
It's more than we normally have. We just can't...
What do you normally do?
Oh, it's just totally darkness.
It's better that way.
We sent the ambiance.
In what way?
Way more romantic.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I mean... It's good. We're glad you're here. You're a legend.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
This is our...
That's what I meant.
Thank you.
Talk again and I'll interrupt you.
Oh, okay.
Okay, go ahead.
This is our 13th podcast.
If 13.
I can, yeah. Unlucky 13. Lucky 13. What do you think?
I think it's apropos considering the subject.
It would have been cooler if this was on Friday the 13th. However, it's on Friday the 12th. The next day is the 13th.
Yeah, so it really just is the lamest thing possible.
Too bad. We should have planned this for a year where it fell on Friday the 13th. Or planned this better.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, well. Well, what did we watch today?
Today we watched Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, my God.
The 13th film?
Yes. I would hope so, because this is the 13th episode.
I don't know. I'm forgetful.
We have established that in many, many episodes.
Yeah.
So this was released in what, 1951?
Sure.
That's what you think?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. I'm positive.
Thank you. This is why you're here. You're a legend. You correct us with our ill logic.
Yes, we have an expert on all things Alice in Wonderland here with us today. So,
his name is DJ Dragaroo.
The budget for this film was about $3 million, same as the...
Same as the last movie?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Can you believe it?
No, I can't. Because it's actually a lot more sophisticated.
Well, did you figure out how to do the conversion yet into modern day dollars?
No.
Let me... Really? You've had
a
week,
man? Forget it.
Dude,
yeah,
come
on.
Jeez.
Don't even...
I'm looking it up, man.
Don't even do those calculations in your head.
I'm not.
Okay.
There's a dollar times.com inflation calculator.
Guess right. I mean, a DJ.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. So far, I think this is the best start we've ever got off to.
Is it on track or what?
Oh, you couldn't be in more on track. Okay, $3 million in 1951 has the same buying power as $27 million.
27?
$27.5 million in 2013. Annual inflation over this period was 3.64%.
That's a big number.
Yeah.
Is that a lot?
Do you have $27 million?
No, but what does an animated film cost to make today?
Today?
Yeah.
What was the most recent
animated... 10 times that, I would guess.
What animated film would you think... of right now?
Princess and the Frog. The last traditionally animated film. Or major release. Right?
I believe so, yeah. Let's see. Princess and the
Frog. I'm going to say it cost maybe 40 million to make a...
40 million? What do you think, Boss Breton?
I already said.
What did you say? I didn't hear. I'm not paying attention, clearly.
I won't repeat myself on this podcast.
$105 million.
105
was the budget for that film.
Wow.
What's 267? It's income?
That's the income. $267 million.
That's pretty good.
$105 million. So this is cheap by comparison.
I would think so.
Much cheaper.
Yeah.
Yep. But the problem is Disney was being bankrupt at this time, right? It went through World War II, didn't really have much revenue. I mean, until it got the last movie, which was Cinderella, did have revenue to even spend. But this was presumably 1951, so they were making it at throughout the same time that they were doing Cinderella. So it was a great gamble.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the film? Maybe we should explain the film.
We could.
Or we could not. I mean, it's based off
It's kind of hard to explain, though.
There's not much going on plot-wise, I would say.
There's a lot of, like, kind of disconnected things that are, like, kind of slammed together, right? So Alice is the schoolgirl who goes on, has, like, this fever dream.
Based on, so Lewis Carroll wrote this film.
Right.
Which is the pen name for...
Did he write the film or the book?
The book, sorry.
The book.
I didn't know if he did screenplays, too, or something.
No. Well, he wrote this in 1895. So. Mm. Oh, 1865. So, sorry.
He was a prognosticator, and he knew movies were coming along.
So he is the Reverend Charles Ludwig Dodgson.
Dodgson?
Yeah, that's his actual name. His pen name is Lewis Carroll.
Okay.
And so he wrote this for Alice Little, who is a real person.
Really?
The story for Alice Little and about her sisters and things around that and people she knew.
Right.
So it's interesting. So the movie draws from two of books from based off of Alice Little.
Okay.
That's The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland.
I've heard of it.
and Through the Looking Glass.
Okay.
Which includes famous things like the Jabberwocky and things like that.
Right.
And a lot of, I think a lot of movies these days kind of, that do renditions of Alice in Wonderland kind of draw from both of these books, which makes perfect sense. There's a little different though. One, Alice in Wonderland, you kind of go through, the portal is totally different. And I think
you're talking about the book.
The book, okay. Right. So the portal through the book for, Alice in Wonderland and Adventures of Alice in Wonderland is basically the rabbit hole. However, Through the Looking Glass is actually going through a mirror.
Okay.
So it's different portals, different parts of parts of her life. And what this does is it takes out stuff from the Alice Adventures in Alice in Wonderland that I think couldn't really be translated to a movie, and kind of draws in things like the walrus and the carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
That's a direct a direct chapter from the... Through the Looking Glass.
Oh, okay.
So it's definitely a mishmash of things and put together in one movie.
Okay, cool.
Same kind of concept.
So have you actually got a chance to read both of those shorts?
I have read both of those books. They're about 100 pages each. It's not huge. Okay. It's about 12 chapters each.
Cool.
So, yeah. I mean, it's really satire. The books, both of them.
It is?
Yes. Both of the books are satire.
About what? Satire using...
There's some political satire, British satire about like society and things like that, which does you kind of see in the movie, but I think it's quite lost.
So the like satirizing. Why can I satirizing?
Satirizing.
Satirizing. Yeah. Thank you.
I come here to be the pronunciation.
That's why you're here,
master. Basically,
I'm
the authority. Even if I'm wrong, these guys won't know. Yeah. So it'll be fine.
We have clearly stopped.
This is going to be a nightmare, man.
The word you're looking for is established?
Yes. This is going to be the worst podcast ever.
Yeah, I'm just going to mispronounce all my words.
Yeah. Oh, at least we have a safety net this time.
How heavy is my glare when you're trying to pronounce tough words exactly?
So they're satirizing.
Yeah.
Good. I got it.
Yeah, there's a lot of like the satire.
British political system?
British politics, British society, right? I mean, the scene of they kind of touch upon this is with the dodo bird, and they're running the caucus race.
Yeah,
right.
Oh,
that's really
right.
A satire.
Okay.
of political system,
and it's a satire because they're running in circles, and they're also trying to dry themselves off and just getting wet over and over again.
Well, that's the problem. The wetness is not in. They are to dry themselves off, but the way that the movie portrayed it, they were constantly getting wet. In the book, they're dressed running around in circles, and Alice asks who wins, and then they just kind of choose that everyone wins. So like there was no really start or end to the race, and it was just like, oh, we'll just decide. right? So, like, the race meant nothing.
Oh, interesting. I like that.
Yeah. And then, so the teacher, or I guess Alice's mom in the beginning, is basically reciting some of these political things. And there's a mouse in the beginning, the dorm mouse.
The dorm mouse.
Yeah. He is also, when Alice is kind of drowning in tears and stuff like that, he's one of the mice that's there, one of the characters that's there.
Yeah.
And to dry her off, basically is reciting history, which is the driest thing that he knows. And so it's really...
That's just British humor all
the
way. I
like that.
Right.
I'm on board
with that. I would recommend reading the books. There's a lot of things that aren't translated to this film. And I think a lot of the Alice adaptations are... They lose some of that... the satire and the wordplay and things
sure,
like that.
Sure.
I think they're just going for a more whimsical feel for the animated feature.
Yeah, obviously. Which is why I think it seems a little disconnected, because they were going for a whimsical feel.
Yeah, it almost seemed like it was designed for short attention spans. Just
kind of, yeah. It almost looks like modern animation.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
There's just constantly jumping into different scenarios with different characters, and then loosely like tying the characters you've seen before back into right. this overarching theme or something. Or overarching film.
There might be a theme. That's debatable.
Somewhere
I'm
in
not
there.
Sure.
Right, and so something that's also really lost is Alice explains about her cat, Dinah, to a lot of people that she meets, or a lot of animals and things that she meets and characters she meets along the way, and everyone's scared because of the Cheshire Cat. That doesn't really come across the film.
So the Cheshire Cat has a reputation.
It does a little bit.
Because
it does
in the film, the Cheshire Cat doesn't exist. Like, it only exists in Alice's head.
Right.
Yeah.
But why do they all get freaked out when...
Like, they don't. They don't react to him at all. No
well,
one does.
Well, she says there's a cat, and they all kind of freak
right.
out.
So the only people that
the
react...
The dormouse does, and so does the queen.
The only people that react are...
But no one can see it.
No, they can see it. It's a weird play.
No one recognizes that it's there, but presumably they can see it.
Yeah. They have run into the cat.
Because they are afraid of cats for some reason
in the
movie. Well,
the dormouse is. I think the dormouse is the isolated, right? Is this anyone else?
No. The Mad Hatter and the March Hare are both... All the characters should be afraid of the...
I'm pretty sure the queen at the end was... Or all those cards and, you know...
Yeah. Were afraid of the cat?
I think so. When she brought it up.
Yeah, there was some fear.
They all freaked out.
But it's not really... it doesn't come across as much as it in the book.
Okay.
No, it was very subtle at best.
I see.
So they did put things from the books into the movie, and I think that's mostly for the adults that read the books and knew about them and kind of watched the movie, but they kind of were glossed over, so the more of the whimsical stuff from the books can be adapted.
They do that with a lot of book adaptations, though, don't they? Like, I mean, Harry Potter, anything, you know, they'll just refer to some like a 100-page story in the book, and it's...
Right.
30 seconds of
the fact
film.
That the original text was only like 100 pages, I mean, it was doable as a fully animated film as it was written in the text, I think. But I think as a children's audience, a lot of the things would be lost, so they did take a different...
I'm not sure dry humor comes across to children very
well. No, they don't. I think for adults, it would be interesting to have this redone with both the Through the Looking Glass and Adventures of Alice in Wonderland. Put together in one feature film animated for adults.
In the books, is there a plot, or is it more just like there's a moral to it, or it's just...
It's kind of like an adventure and satire and chapters,
right.
Loosely based chapters, which is what the movie comes across
as. So, I mean, like, does it follow timeline-wise the same kind of...
For the most part, there's things that were brought in, like the... Tweedledee and Tweedledum to and they took things out. There's chapters that were taken out, but the trial comes at the end, and she is sleeping. And
yeah, oh, okay.
So there are things that the timeline is from the timeline perspective. It's Adventures of Alice in Wonderland.
Okay,
with things substituted from Through the Looking Glass.
Oh, well, how did you like it?
I liked it, but you guys have never seen this film, have you?
Oh, I've seen it, sure.
Not recently. Not enough to recall very much of it.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it in maybe...
I'm sure I have seen it.
10 years or so.
It's been much longer than that for me, if anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not something they play regularly on TV and things like that. But there are adaptations of this, right? They did Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland recently.
How do you like that?
That's an interesting one because it kind of mixes both of them. It does introduce the White Queen.
Yeah, it's like more true to the text, right?
A little bit. I think it loses its satire as well. It kind of tries to make it an epic adventure tale, which it kind of is, but not really.
Because they actually fight the Jabberwocky in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I've never seen that. It didn't look that
It's a good one. Sci-Fi Channel did one similar kind of thing, adaptation. I think it was it Zoe Deschanel was in it? Oh, no, she was in another one.
Okay.
But they had an interpretation of Alice in Wonderland there, too.
Oh,
on Sci-Fi Channel.
On Sci-Fi Channel.
How was that?
It was a mini series. Let me pull it up.
Was it good? Did you see it?
I saw it. I also just watched bad movies too. So I mean that doesn't say much.
Yeah, but how did you like it?
It was an interesting take because the March Hare was kind of this assassin kind of guy. It was a different take. It was like futuristic,
like a futuristic.
Yeah, it was definitely a futuristic,
like
take.
Modernized or like in the future.
Modernized. Oh, well, not modernized. It was like half modernized, half the alternate world was this crazy, like dystopian future.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Anything goes with Alice in Wonderland.
I guess so.
I learned from the movie.
Yeah.
What was it called?
I think if there was anything.
It's called Alice. It was two episodes, 180 minutes.
Oh.
Released December 2009.
I think if there was any theme to the film, it was that anything goes.
Hmm.
Oh yeah. So
sure.
I forgot that Tim Curry was in it. Kathy Bates was in it. She was the Queen of Hearts. So, and
it doesn't ring any bells for me.
And Katerina Scorsone was in it. So she is of the Scorsone family. Yeah, nothing much. It was an
okay.
It was an okay film. It was an interesting adaptation, but definitely, there. I think the books and the film provide like this kind of. You can take this text and adapt it and interpret it in whatever way you want to kind of make it more modernized, but use the same kind of themes.
Okay.
Because Once Upon a Time. ABC's kind of fairy tale show that's gone on for two seasons is doing a spinoff for 13 episodes, which is Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, which is looking at Alice. They've gone into that kind of world a little bit, introducing the Mad Hatter and who the Queen of Hearts are and who they were and stuff like that.
Right.
So we'll see. It would be very interesting to see their interpretation of the text as well.
Sure. But what do you think about this interpretation of the film?
I liked it. I definitely liked. I definitely could do without many of the songs.
Well, what about it did you like? Like, were there any standout moments?
The standout moments for me is the tea party. I think
definitely for me as well.
The unbirthday.
The unbirthday song and just the tea party and the riddles, because the riddles are something that they kept from the book.
So they're verbatim. You're saying
the riddles are the unbirthday song? No, because the reason that they're celebrating tea time is because at 6 p.m. they're kind of frozen. So it's just this weird thing.
What?
Let me actually get the...
At 6 p.m. they're frozen?
Yeah.
Why is that surprising exactly?
I guess I shouldn't be surprised by anything.
The Hatter reveals that they have tea all day because time has punished him by eternally standing still at 6 p.m., which is tea time.
Wow, that's kind of brutal.
So they're stuck in that moment.
They're stuck in that moment forever.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he just always has to be drinking tea.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah. They're always.
He loves it, apparently, though.
They're as mad as a hatter.
Well, maybe that's why, right?
Right. And it's the March Hare.
He has no other option.
His brain's just full of tea chemicals only.
Yeah. I thought that scene. Actually, I was thoroughly impressed by just about everything.
Oh,
I saw everything was just kind of crazy.
Right.
Definitely.
So a lot of that stuff and the characters are based off of sayings, right? Mad as a March hare is a British English phrase.
Oh.
And then mad as a hatter also is an English phrase. So
it makes sense.
Yep.
That influence definitely stands and pervades throughout the entire film and every single character. And it almost is too much. It's almost too much to deal with. But it's impressive, like the commitment to it. Like literally everything, like you have the opening scene where the white rabbit, right? Alice is in her house and just is kind of aloof. Is like, hey, I'll eat this. Sure. I'll do whatever, this piece of food is going to tell me to do.
Yep.
Turns into a house. And then,
she does not turn into a house. She turns into a large person. She grows bigger.
Yeah.
And stuck inside the house.
Yeah. And the white rabbit panics and they call him the dodo from the previous scene for no apparent reason other than he was a character that was already established, I guess.
So the dodo is supposed to represent Lewis Carroll.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was he stuttered a lot, so he his name is Dodson, so he kind of said do Dodson.
Oh, okay.
So he said dodo. So the dodo is supposed to be him.
Is totally off topic. Is the guy in Jurassic Park named after him? Dodson? The guy who buys the stuff from Dennis
Nedry. I would like to believe so at this point. Yeah, I think that's
maybe that is a reference to him.
Maybe.
I mean, I think a lot of things in pop culture and since this book and since these movies do reference Alice in Wonderland. There's definitely like characters, Mad Hatter.
Yeah, but going back to that scene in particular, I mean, the thing I found kind of not jarring, but impressive and kind of shocking was that they were just willing to like toss around the characters. Like the white rabbit was like slapped into a fence and like he was hitting it head on and then bounced back from it. And, you know, just the themes, like they're going to burn the house down because this giant woman, like just even talking about it sounds like I'm insane.
Right. So this is looking at British society, right? I mean, it could have easily been fixed if they just opened up the roof for her to climb out. Mm-hmm. But they come up with the most absurd solution, which is to try to smoke her out or burn her out, the house down
right.
around her. So it's looking at that kind of British society and what's going on.
Yeah. There's a high level of absurdism throughout.
Yeah. Which I mean, that's what's expected, I think, from the film.
But it's so different from anything else we've seen.
But the source material is different than anything else we've seen, right?
Yeah, I wonder how they even came across this to begin with.
I mean, it's a very popular book, Lewis Carroll's Adventures of Alice in Wonderland.
But like in the United States?
I think worldwide, yes. Hmm. I mean, you've never read it, though.
No, I haven't.
I recommend it to anyone that watches this films or any adaptation to read the books. I think they're really good reads. They're quite short. And it does give you an interesting perspective on, I think, the society of the late 19th century and British society at the time.
Fair enough.
Did you like the Queen of Hearts and her entire gang of cards?
Yeah, they were bizarre as well. I like that the king was kind of the subservient, kind of the child, as compared to the queen. She was surely calling the shots, and he was just, or she was just entertaining the king's desire to have like a trial. Like, what? Okay, explain to me the context of that scene.
The trial?
Yeah.
It's an absurd trial, right? I mean, they didn't take really into effect the evidence and stuff, and they were just ready to try her, right? So just like, oh, let's just write something down, let's go.
Write a sentence
but
before.
They have absurd rules, like, if you have this, then you can, you got to get kicked out, right? I mean, this is the absurdity of just society.
It's just a lot of mature themes that I wouldn't expect Disney to tackle. And I guess in a sense, they kind of didn't.
Because
you
could
go in without knowing any of this and get a completely different image of the film. So it works on a couple of levels, I suppose.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think? What were your impressions of the film? Overall.
Anything? It really turned me off at first. I don't know why. Just is maybe what you're talking about where it's just going all over the place. It just didn't seem to have a point for a while. Yeah, the lack of continuity turned me off at first.
Sure.
And I don't think that the first few shorts or whatever you want to call them were really just that very good.
Well, I think they cut out a lot of stuff from the book that kind of tied a little bit of that together.
So you're talking about the scenes with the clams?
The clam, yeah, the oysters.
Yeah, the oysters.
That was through the looking glass itself, so I think
I like the way that ended, I guess. It was pretty dark.
Yeah. A lot of, yeah, it was pretty grim.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's basically don't just follow someone, right?
Oh. What were they doing exactly? I didn't quite understand that. They're just walking along a beach, and then yeah. They're just, oh, I'm hungry for some oysters.
Yeah.
Let's scoop them all up and eat them.
Right, and they tricked them.
Okay.
And they ate them.
That was a tale being told by the dodo, right?
No, that's a tale.
By Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Oh, right. By
which
Tweedledee
is
and Tweedledum.
Have entered our common vernacular, right? I mean, that is quite... Everyone uses it all the time. It's mentioned very frequently in a lot of pop culture references.
My main thing I was surprised by, though, is how... undeveloped Alice is as a character completely.
She just kind of floats through it.
Yeah, she's just there to go from scene to scene, basically, and introduce other characters.
Alice is your tool to go through this world and explore it and look through it. And it's the same way in the book, right? She's just going.
She's kind of a blank slate, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Is she constantly growing and shrinking in the books, too?
Yes.
She just can't seem to figure that out. I don't know. It's like she's so really surprised by it but every
book,
time.
In the scene with the where they have an actual talking door when she enters that room, there is no talking door. It's just a door, right? Doorknob. And there is a glass table, and there's actually a note on the table. Alice, drink me.
Uh-huh.
So she just drinks it.
Yeah.
She's just blindly doing whatever is there in front of her to do.
Right.
And she follows that.
I mean, is there a lesson to be learned from that, though?
I don't know.
Well, she kind of breaks down at one point, right?
Yeah.
Saying
yeah.
that she should have followed her own
advice.
But
what was that?
Ultimately, it didn't resonate very strongly because it just all kind of worked out. Because, oh, it's just a dream. Who cares? And then she just wakes up and didn't learn anything from her lesson and just goes home with her mom. And her mom just kind of is, oh, you. I guess.
Oh, you, Alice.
It's tea time. Let's just go home.
Yeah. Poor Alice.
Okay. That's, I found that a little bit unsatisfying. Even though you could see it coming kind of a mile away, right?
Sure. Like
she wants to be in this absurd world, but then it's too much for her.
Right. She doesn't want to deal with reality, like, to begin with, right?
Yes.
She's really bored with this, clearly, like, upper class. Egalitarian lifestyle she has.
Right, yeah.
And so she escapes to this alternate universe and then is horrified by it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, at the end of the story, she really hasn't changed.
She hasn't changed at all. No.
She hasn't grown.
Just at one point, she cries and makes a bunch of birds in the forest disappear.
Like I said, it's a fever dream.
Basically.
So the Queen of Hearts is supposed to represent possibly Queen Victoria.
Okay.
Or Queen Margaret from within the War of the Roses kind of epic.
Were they obsessed with beheading people?
No, so Queen Victoria didn't really have a husband. So
right.
That's why the King of Hearts is really nothing.
So
that's why people suspect that. Or... it's Queen Margaret, which is because of the Red Roses and White Roses, which is the War of the Roses, which is between the two houses during that time. They were fighting over power. In the end, the Tudors came about to rule. So
that doesn't seem to be the right one to me.
I would
bet Victoria just because of what... I mean, the White and Red Rose thing doesn't really mean anything in the film. She just likes red stuff.
Well, so Queen Margaret... So
at least that's the way it's portrayed in the film.
The roses are of the two houses, the Lannisters.
And, right.
And the other one, I can't remember. I was actually just reading upon this, the House of York, reading about this a couple days ago.
Okay.
I was just interested in... Because there's this, I think, Stars or HBO series. Or no, BBC, I think. BBC has a series about the War of the Roses.
Right.
So I kind of wanted to get into that. Kind of cool. Great history.
Cool,
British
cool.
history. But I think a lot of the portrayals of the characters would be lost on most people because it is a period piece, right? You're looking at late 19th century British society, which...
Isn't that kind of a thing with TV shows right now, though?
Yes.
So maybe they will get it.
Maybe.
The Tudors and Downton Abbey and... When is Downton Abbey set?
No, Downton Abbey is set over many years. It starts off during...
I shouldn't have asked.
Look what you've done.
You've opened up the can of worms.
I was hoping you were just going to say a number and move on.
No, I mean, it's set in about 1920s to past World War II. That's what you're looking at.
Okay.
Yeah, so about three seasons, three different years. It sets... Oh, no, it starts off in the year of... 1912. It starts off with the sinking of the Titanic, and you guys are so excited about this film. It goes through World War I, and then it goes through the Roaring Twenties at that point. Sorry, not
are they really affected by any of that though? Aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Drinking tea and shit.
No, they are affected. People do get deployed for World War I, and they come back.
Sucked me in again.
And they come back, and their house becomes a refugee place for World War I returnees, which is an interesting concept. Like you're looking at, and it is very poignant because you're looking at the same kind of wars that we're having now, and people coming back, and what kind of ailments that they were facing at that time. But we are definitely getting off topic.
So. You can hear more about this on Catatonic Cat's Downton Abbey podcast coming soon.
Maybe it will. I don't know. I have many podcasts. I'll never have a day job anymore. I'll just be recording podcasts. I'll never have a voice.
I don't know. Downton Abbey seems okay, but yeah, that's a different show.
Yeah, definitely a different show.
My favorite character.
Yes.
In this movie.
It's a Dormouse.
The Dormouse was cool, but I like the Cheshire Cat. And I like the Cheshire Cat because
he's Winnie the Pooh.
He is Winnie the Pooh. And he's like, he's kind of like the God in this movie. Like he knows exactly what's going on.
Yes.
Right? He's kind of aloof and like on top of everything, and he sees how ridiculous this everything is and just ridicules Alice because of it. I think that's a fantastic concept, a fantastic character. I was really engaged by that.
I liked him quite a bit too, yeah. I would say.
He's a good character. He's pops up in a lot of pop culture, the Cheshire Cat.
Yeah. Yeah, right. For sure.
I'm not sure if it's for those reasons, but he's definitely iconic.
He's iconic. The Mad Hatter is iconic.
Yeah. The
March Hare is sadly not as iconic.
Definitely the character. Yeah, I agree. The chemistry between the March Hare and like that scene was just spectacular.
I thought it was by far the best
the tea party
sequence in the movie.
And the chemistry and the back and forth between the Mad Hatter, the March Hare, and Alice, and occasionally the Dormouse, which is really a prop. I mean, let's be realistic. Was just perfect. Like that was they had incredible comedic timing.
Yeah, I don't think you could
incredible
really
wordplay. Like yeah,
do that any better. Yeah, it was pretty much a perfect scene.
Yeah,
I would say.
Those were by far the two standout moments for me.
I enjoyed the lizard with the ladder character personally. Yeah, his only purpose was to. Just try to climb up. He's a chimney sweep, I suppose.
Yes.
Right, he's just
his
a guy.
Purpose was to be launched into space and then succinctly forgotten by the Dodo.
I forgot about that. But yeah, he gets launched into space and like...
And Dodo says, well, there goes Will.
And then, that's it.
And then he's gone from the rest of the movie. So presumably he's just dead.
That's also...
Floating in space.
I mean, and that happens early on in the movie and sets the tone for the rest of it. It's like...
Yeah.
Anything right. could happen. Right.
That was a pretty. I like that joke quite a bit.
I love it. Anything could happen.
Yeah.
So that should be the theme of this, like the subtitle for this film, Alice: The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Anything could happen.
Pretty much.
But that's also pop culture, right? The grin of a Cheshire Cat.
Mm-hmm.
That's a
right.
So, yeah, I would say the tea scene is one of my favorites, even in the book.
Yeah,
I think that and the race, the caucus race,
in the movie or in the book?
In the book.
Okay.
Yeah, and the movie, it was quite short, and
it just didn't have the same impact.
It didn't really even fit, honestly.
It was goofy. I don't know. I appreciate it on some level.
Honestly, I think they, like I said, they put it in to kind of give this hint to, like, adults, right? Like, oh, who read the book and things like that. But I like they kind of added some of the stuff from the book, not explaining it. So it kind of makes you want to, like, oh, and was the book like this?
It seemed to me like a lot of these scenes, like, they were trigger words. Like, a word would come out, and then suddenly the white rabbit would appear and move them into the next scene. Or like, they would trigger the dormouse with the word cat or stuff like that. It was just... It's just like everyone was ready and primed for something, some specific thing to be said. And right. then it's just like, we're changing the subject. We're going to the next scene. And that is what I think kind of differentiates this from, like, the package films that we saw. Is, you know, loose association.
Yeah.
But there is an association. There is a callback. It's kind of like a...
Right.
It's a modern... A joke in itself.
Yeah.
So that I kind of dug.
I definitely love it better than any package film we've seen. It's a film, and like you said, it's a very more modernized film. Like for the budget that they had,
a modern. Yeah,
I think it holds up quite well for its age. Yeah. I would say.
A lot of these films seem to a lot of these feature length, actually with the story and kind of character development, actually show up. They hold up very well.
Yeah,
and the jokes are pretty good. There's definitely.
I think most of them come through. Yeah.
Yeah. It very well made film. I think for $3 million, quite well made. One thing that's interesting to me, ever since Dumbo.
Yeah.
When you look at these, I'm wondering if there's this one artist that tends to like do these like psychedelic scenes. Like you see it in every one of these the now feature films. It's like this weird like. Bubbles and things.
You're referring to the Cinderella scene.
Yeah, Cinderella scene, right? So that's like you take Dumbo, and then you have the Cinderella scene with the bubbles, and then this one has kind of something like with the cards.
I think it's the
stuff.
Cards. Yeah. They're just going
like crazy
rainbow
with colors. Yeah.
Right.
Is this something that you think that they were trying to like look at the Technicolor aspect of it and just kind of put kind of montages in there?
I don't really know. Maybe.
It's just an interesting thing that doesn't seem to have held up in further films, like later down the road. It's just something that, to that time, seemed like an...
It's just kind of like an interlude. And I don't know if it really works.
I really didn't enjoy it in
like, see, the
this
only
film.
Recent,
it is really out of place.
Recent interpretation of that I can think of is Ratatouille, right?
Yes.
Where there's that moment where Remy has eaten some food in the kitchen or something like that, and then there's this abstract moment where he's describing what he's eating. It's like him on the black screen.
Oh,
it's the very beginning of the film. Yeah, and then there are all these colors is done by Mikhail Ganji or something, I think, did the animated scene. And that's the only time where I can think they moved to some kind of abstract
This is just
depiction.
An interesting like kind of montage that they have used. And
yeah, I guess maybe this is the animated montage of the 1950s, right?
Yeah.
Which is a trope that has been relied heavily in since the 90s to this day. Like, you can't see an animated film that does not have a montage now. So maybe it's just different.
Maybe it's just filmmaking sense, because there's definitely a lot of films that do have that just montage. You have Rocky with the montage.
Yeah.
So it's and you have... the dude, when he's high.
But, I mean, the thing about that is the montage is a device to get the story moving, right?
I think this stuff
has happened, but in this case, it's just like, oh, we got cool stuff to show you.
Yeah, yeah, I think
or
that's
we
what
have
it
to
is.
Fill time because we got nothing, man.
It is a low-budget film, right? So maybe they just give it to that guy or whoever it is and say, make a colorful scene that lasts for 45 seconds.
I don't know.
Also, it's pronounced montage, not montage, or whatever your kids are saying.
Great. Montage?
Yes.
Montage.
No.
All right, so anthropomorphic?
No.
What did you say there?
Anthropomorphic.
Anthropomorphic?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, anthropology is the study of human
anthropology?
Beings. Yes. Okay. Well, that's what you're insinuating with your pronunciation.
Yeah, that's exactly
anthropomorphic.
Anthropomorphic.
I love anthropology.
And me too.
Oh, man. I love the Caterpillar. He's great.
You do?
Yeah. I think that he could totally fit into our Twitter universe that these days. He's like R-U-Y.
I thought he was just a jerk.
Yeah.
Well, he was high, right?
He was just rude.
Yeah. It was just rude for no reason.
Yeah.
Really?
What was his special message to her? Just don't lose your temper?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, right. He called her back because she was storming off. He called her back to say, chill out.
Well, I guess that's in keeping with that high theme.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who the Caterpillar is supposed to represent.
I'm not sure who he would represent in 1850s British culture either.
Yeah.
Did they have drugs back then?
Drugs? Yeah, I think they did. Yeah.
Opium or something, maybe?
They had a lot of things back then. They weren't illegal. Oh, it was referenced in Freddy vs. Jason with a hookah-smoking caterpillar.
I think it's a pretty iconic character, too. It's, I think it appears on a lot of graphics and things that I've seen for logos and whatnot.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting character. I don't know what it's supposed to represent. I haven't found any.
He could only speak while exhaling smoke, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's an interesting character, nonetheless. I would say the iconic characters you're looking at for this is the White Rabbit, who's barely in this film.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting.
The Mad Hatter and the Caterpillar and the Cheshire Cat, right? Those are the four iconic characters.
Everyone, I think so.
Everyone refers to the Queen of Hearts, but as a character and her animation, it's not as...
nearly as compelling to me. No. In either one.
Yeah, I agree.
The animation of the Cheshire Cat is much more impressive, I would say. And the Caterpillar. I liked the only thing I liked about the Caterpillar was how his legs were acting independently of his brain at certain points.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
I can see that.
That was really the only levity they put into that scene. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he's just berating Dallas the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting... They had some interesting... I say interesting a lot. I got to stop that.
I thought that was DJ Dragaroo's thing for a while.
Hey, you stole my shtick, man.
Yeah. What's up with that? I don't know what happened. I got hooked to it from you.
You literally did.
Yeah.
I think... There's a new catchphrase that DJ Dragaroo might have just said. There's a couple of catchphrases.
DJ is an unnecessary prefix. Just FYI.
I don't enjoy just plain Dragaroo.
DJ Dragaroo spins some cool tracks.
Why can't we just leave a good thing?
You just want to be Dragaroo?
Sure.
What about like DJ Drag?
That's much better. Yes, thank you.
Anyway, I completely forgot your catchphrase, so mission well done, sir.
Well, I know
that was your ultimate goal from that. I'm sure upon listening back to this, I will discover it and let you know. I know you're dying to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
what was I going to say? I don't remember.
Alice in Wonderland.
There's this show on Sci-Fi Channel called Warehouse 13.
There was a show.
I thought that got canceled.
On Sci-Fi Channel.
It's still
Warehouse
going
13.
On. It has another season. It got canceled for next season. Yeah.
Oh,
next
really?
Season is going to be its last seven episodes or six episodes.
Oh, okay.
And so the way they interpreted Lewis Carroll is Alice is actually this crazy psychotic girl.
Sure, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
There's the American McGee game, Alice, right?
I do not know this
game.
Which
depicted her as that. Yeah, it was like a super dark...
Really, yeah. So
adventure-style gaming, yeah. Right?
Interesting.
It was like a first person, or maybe third person. There was a remake of it recently, too.
Yeah,
but
yes.
The original one was like this dark, grim... It was either first person or third person game where Alice was just like this kind of... She was the same character, but she was kind of goth. Or it happened in like a goth universe.
When was that game made?
Yeah,
the original
mid-90s, late 90s. Yeah,
I remember the remakes recently. Was that by Telltale, by the way?
No. It was American McGee.
Oh, that's the company name?
That's the dude's name, the designers. That's when they attached designer names to games.
Oh.
Yeah.
I remember it was American McGee's.
Yeah.
So such and such. So I didn't really know
speaking of
meant.
Video games, Alice in Wonderland is actually put into a very iconic video game that is out there.
That's right. Super Mario World.
I don't know if it's iconic.
Super Mario World.
Yeah, not many people know about Super Mario World.
Oh, okay.
It's a little underground indie classic.
Yeah. I'm not talking about Super Mario World. I am talking about, my brain has fried.
I know what you're talking about, but I'm going to let you think for a little bit.
No, you're here to correct me in my missteps. Please correct me.
I believe you're referring to Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy 11.
You mean Kingdom Hearts?
The Never Years.
Oh, Kingdom Hearts?
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts.
What's that?
It's this movie.
I have a little bone to pick with your description of what you do with the Keyblade, by the way.
Oh, please describe us. What do you
No, I'm just gonna put that out there.
That you just have a bone.
What they did in Fun and Fancy Free is not what you do with the Keyblade.
Well, it's not, but it's inspiration for the Keyblade, possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah.
It was the approximately correct size.
Yes.
Maybe.
So, but Alice in Wonderland is in Kingdom Hearts.
It is, and I'm much more familiar with Kingdom Hearts than with Alice in Wonderland. And they've the environments in Alice in Wonderland follow the movie pretty accurately, I would say.
Yeah.
I do like the when you are in the room and you have to go up and down in size and stuff is an interesting level.
Right. That's mostly the beginning of it. But they have the Queen's Court or whatever it's called. They have the forest.
Yeah.
With the Cheshire Cat in it. And then they have, I think, the Mad Hatter's house, on birthday party.
Oh, right. Yeah, I actually did get that far in that game.
Wait, you didn't get very far in that game?
I haven't finished Kingdom Hearts 1, but what? I did get that
It's
far.
Actually an easier...
The second level.
Yes.
So I would hope so.
So you didn't really get very far at all. I finished the game.
I finished Kingdom Hearts 2.
What? Kingdom Hearts 2 versus Kingdom Hearts 1.
Interesting how you finished the worst of the two games.
Well, it was the easier one, right? So I finished it in the right order.
Oh, really? I never played Kingdom Hearts 2. I only played Kingdom Hearts 1.
Don't bother, is what I would say.
It's fine. He's being harsh.
So I am. I'm a huge
Is there other Disney,
Kingdom Hearts
What
fan.
Are the Disney ones in Kingdom Hearts 2 that...
A lot
Tron.
Of them. Lion King, Tron. Mulan.
Yeah, Lion King.
So more modernized.
Well, just
not necessarily
different.
Just different.
Different.
You go back to some places, right? You go back to like. Don't you go back to the? You already said Pirates of the Caribbean.
They do Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Did you go back to Nightmare Before Christmas, that area, or am I thinking again of?
I don't remember that from number two. I only played number two one time because I just, as I said, it wasn't
Kingdom
so
Hearts
hot on it.
One was difficult.
Really? I liked it a lot.
And therefore, good.
It was a good game. I think
Kingdom Hearts 2 was largely button mashing, so.
I was okay with
that. If you can do X and triangle, you'll win the game.
I got to see the end of Kingdom Hearts 2. I still haven't seen
it. I can show you the end of Kingdom Hearts 1 right now.
No.
Pop it into your PlayStation. Let's do it.
I think it'll only take maybe
marathon.
I don't even know where I am.
Maybe a couple hours. We would finish that.
A couple hours.
No.
Yeah.
No. Totally depends on where he is. Are you
kidding
me?
Yeah. Where are you in that game?
I don't know. Probably someplace. I remember doing the Hercules stuff. Like there's
that.
Oh,
is,
so you're Cerberus.
That is.
You're at. Oh man.
No, that's a recurring level in the game.
Yeah.
There's many tournaments you can.
That's the last thing I remember from it though.
You probably were stuck on the Hades Cup. Just saying. It's a 50-round tournament at the end. You fight Hades at the end.
Yeah, probably. That sounds terrible.
I will finish that game. Anyway, I didn't know where the flowers in that forest came from originally.
But now you know.
They are all basically in that scene in Alice in Wonderland. So I thought that was kind of cool.
So is there a Disney film you wish was portrayed in Kingdom Hearts for the sequel?
Yeah, what's going to be in Kingdom Hearts 3? What do you want to see in it?
Yeah.
Good question. Probably just Wreck-It Ralph only.
So you just want a Wreck-It Ralph game.
What do they not have in there?
They didn't have any of the Pixar properties.
Yeah, none of the Pixar properties
are
there.
You think they would do that? I guess they would.
You think they could just put Star Wars in there too, right? Because now Disney owns
that.
No, that would just not
That
fit.
Wouldn't be a... Well, I guess Kingdom Hearts itself is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I don't think
in what
you have
way?
To,
name
you have
one
to,
way in which Kingdom Hearts is ridiculous.
One way?
<Just kidding. laughs>
I mean, you have to think, like, it's a Japanese audience, right? So
not Star Wars.
Is it going to appeal to them?
I don't know.
I don't think so. They're going to go for franchises that appeal to... That's a fair point.
Thank you.
Why would they do that then?
I have no idea.
To make money? I don't know. Oh, probably.
Because, I mean, the Tron Legacy hadn't come out but when Kingdom Hearts 2 came out.
No, did not.
But it was going to come out, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I did not think it was even announced when Kingdom Hearts 2
came out. Yeah, that was an odd choice, come to think. Well, who knows? Who knows what the criteria
is? I did not enjoy that level, by the way.
Not
just saying, Kingdom Hearts 2 sucks.
I like the Lion King level. I thought that was cool.
That's because Lion King is your favorite.
Regardless.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think you're strongly biased.
I liked it. It was good. And they brought Stitch in. Maybe they'll do a Lilo and Stitch level.
Was Stitch in that game? Was he a summon spell or something?
Summon, yeah.
Yeah, I don't... Whatever.
You think Pinocchio... Was Pinocchio in the second one?
I don't know. No, not
in
the second one.
He was in the first one.
Yeah.
But... Pretty heavily. The Monstro was one of the levels in that.
Yeah.
Pinocchio is just a world-class dick. In that game, basically. He is a real jerk. Which I guess isn't that far off from the movie.
But none of the princesses were in there, right? We don't see Cinderella. We don't see...
In what?
In Kingdom Hearts, right?
You are so off base here, it's not even funny. That's the freaking point of the game. You're saving the Disney princesses. All of them are in it.
Well, seven, right? I mean,
yes.
There's more Disney
princesses. They added... one of the characters in the game as the seventh one, Kairi. But Alice is one of them. Jasmine, Aurora, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, and Belle. So that's all seven, right?
Ariel.
Ariel somehow is not one of the princesses that you save.
Yeah.
But you do play her level.
You do play her level.
But they're definitely in the game.
They're in the game, but their levels are not in the game, right?
Oh, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Their worlds aren't in the game?
Their worlds aren't in the
Agrabah.
Game. Agrabah's in there, but you don't see Cinderella's world.
What would you do there?
I don't know. You would do something, I guess. Snow White.
Just beat up her stepmother?
Snow White, you would fight some, find some gems and stuff.
Maleficent's in it.
She's in it, but the world isn't, right?
No. You do fight her dragon form.
Maleficent is Sleeping Beauty. Not Snow White.
Oh, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
As another reference.
Ursula's in it. I liked Ursula. She was good.
She gets real big.
Yeah, she does. Dragaroo, you were saying?
No, saying that just made me recall the rhythm game portion of the second game, which is...
Dragaroo, that's what
There was like a Little Mermaid rhythm game.
That's right. You just play under the sea.
Incredibly bad.
It was so dumb.
Just like, because they were like, I guess translated lyrics...
Yes.
Maybe?
I think so.
They were complete nonsense and really incredibly, like, the worst garbage I've ever seen.
Was that a side world, by the way, or is that a real main thing?
Oh, I don't think it
would.
It could have been a side thing.
I think it was a side world.
I think he had to do it, or at least I did it once, and then I, like, yeah, that's enough of that.
Agreed. And so, why do you like this game exactly again? I'm just wondering. You seem to be remembering a lot of bad points about it, more than good.
I don't know. My experience was mostly positive, I think.
I beat it, therefore it's good.
Yes, I'm
That's
not
your new
that
catchphrase.
Particular,
I beat it, therefore it's good.
Yeah, sure.
That counts a lot, you know? Being able to see if story tends to finish.
Well,
no.
If you're just good at games, I mean...
Yeah, if you have just natural talent of games, which I do not.
Natural talent.
I have no natural talent.
BS.
You think I have natural talent at games? I do not. I lose at all the games.
You lose at all the games?
Yeah. Like, I buy board games and I will lose at them.
Mm.
You can't.
Untrue. Yeah, he's just holding back.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want us to feel bad until...
It's a good strategy, probably. We wouldn't play with you if you just beat us all the time.
Yeah, so no I don't way. Beat you all the time. That's what happens. Definitely a good movie. I think it needs to get more airplay, though.
You think Alice in Wonderland needs to be
I think
shown
it does
more?
Not get enough airplay for the movie, for what it is.
Okay.
I'm not sure it's as appealing as bringing, you know, the princess movies out of the vault for Disney. You're not going to exactly
it's a different audience.
Young kids,
but I think it's a different audience with it, right?
It is. I think it's a smaller audience, though. Probably.
Possibly.
The way they would advertise it.
Yeah.
I would think.
Like, that film couldn't get made today.
No way.
There's no way that would happen.
How would you pitch that?
Oh, the animation film, right?
Yeah.
Or the story used. Because the story used got remade with Tim Burton, which got pitched today.
Well, they already made a movie out of it that was fairly successful, so there's precedent there.
Yeah. No, I think the animated film that we saw... I mean, even when the live-action adaptations were bizarre, but not on the same level. Like, I don't know. For some reason, it seemed more... Well, it wasn't a cartoon. And so it had to be grounded in some kind
reality
of logic. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
you couldn't have rabbit's head slamming into the wall.
Yeah.
You kind of see Helena Bonham Carter's head as a heart in Tim Burton's version of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
There is ridiculousness in that.
There is, but it's played so much more straight that I think...
I'm not sure that serves the material very well.
Yeah.
Did it? I mean, I didn't see that. Did you?
I didn't like it. I did not like that movie.
The adaptation?
The adaptation that Tim Burton
thought stylistically was good, but I wasn't a huge fan of it.
I wasn't a huge fan of it at all.
There's just not much there to go off of to make it into a straight
story. I think you have to make this an animated film. I would love to see Pixar do their take on it, but I don't think they will ever do that because they have original stories.
I don't know if Pixar could do it.
I don't think they could either.
Pixar sweetens stuff too much. It would be too... It's not their forte.
Maybe DreamWorks?
They don't really do anything that out there either.
No one does. We have to start our own...
They do goofy,
company.
But they don't do... It doesn't have...
They don't do dark and just strange stuff, generally.
Well, we should do one.
I don't know any animation studios that do that.
That could do that today.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I think the people... No, I think DC Animation. Everyone behind DC Animation.
DC?
Yes.
They have an animation studio?
Yeah. They do a lot of the Justice League stuff and things like that. They provide a very dark feel to it. I think they could totally do this.
Alice in Wonderland's not so dark, I wouldn't say.
Right, but they could interpret it in such a way. They don't have that precedent to have to make everything.
I think it would lend itself more to a Japanese anime style than anything, if you're going to animate it today.
Was there an anime?
Kind of frenetic and... I would think
several.
So, yeah. But any studio could do it, or you know,
if anyone was going to do it now, it would be through that medium for sure.
Yeah, it just fits with the ridiculousness and everything.
Yeah.
Now let me look at films and television programs based on Alice in Wonderland. Let's actually look if there is a Japanese one.
I'd be pretty shocked if there wasn't.
There's a lot of adaptations. It seems like every year there's like a couple adaptations.
More to your point, Donnie, why do you think animation studios are unwilling to make a movie like that now? It's just not guaranteed profit, or
I think
what's
so.
Going on there?
I think it's just too much risk.
Yeah.
Right? You gotta be able to market it. Like, you know, today they're spending as much money or more money on marketing a film than they are making it, right?
I would. Yeah, definitely.
So if you can't sell it and it's not a sure thing, like from the get go, then it's just not going to happen. I mean, that's why you're seeing, I think, to an extent, like sequels. Like you're going to see like
Finding Nemo 2.
Or even like live action, like the Avengers
right.
2 or Star Trek are going to be less risky because you're paying everyone so much more and you're investing so much more all around that it has to be a commercial success.
Those
and
movies
so,
are very expensive.
Yeah.
I assume.
And so they're much more risk averse.
Right.
So you're not going to have stuff that's really kind of different or daring or groundbreaking from a major studio like that.
So that's so now that Pixar is more of a major studio, would you say they are also less they're more risk averse?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why we're seeing a lot more sequels like
I think
Monsters University and things like that.
Yeah.
So what we need is another up and coming studio to come about.
Definitely.
To try to make something similar to kind of in the vein of some of these
perhaps
more daring early Disney films as well as early Pixar films.
Perhaps. Like Yeah.
Well, what else do you think would happen? Do you think there'd be enough backlash from just sequelitis that they would go back to trying to risky stuff?
There would totally have been sequelitis and reinterpretation in live action by now, because the amount of sequels that we do get that are useless and the amount of reinterpretations that we do get are quite overbearing that I think we would have seen that outlash right by now, but we do not. I think it is going to come to a point that people are going to ask for new material and especially in animation. But for now, I think that you see Disney and you see Pixar as both at least pushing out newish material with tried and true characters, which is with Monsters University. You see Toy Story 3. You see a Pixar movie or sequel to Finding Nemo with Finding Dory, things like this, which is a universe they've built already that they can at least rely on for people to come back because they made money off of the original.
Just does not appeal to me at all. Is what I'm saying. Well,
I agree with you.
I wish there'd be a way to fix that.
I wish there would be more interpretation of literature in animation as well as newer literature and things like that. But maybe it is tough.
Yeah, it's not to say like everyone is doing that. It's not like
no.
Like take DreamWorks for example, right? Like they're not like just rehashing the same stories. They're actually doing adaptations of new stuff and doing new pictures, but the way they're mitigating risk is by just advertising all these stars that are famous actors to headline the film, whether or not they actually contribute anything to it or not. At least, you know, there's a name associated with it, so you probably should go see it.
Right, and right. I don't know if that's a good way of doing it, too.
No, I don't think it is.
definitely not from a creative aspect.
I think a lot more of the risk is taken into television these days.
Sure. Easily.
Because you can get away with writing an entire season and write it off of not working.
They have one and off stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean,
or you're not even full season runs yet.
You got a couple six episodes and you try it out, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And you don't continue the studio to draw it. So.
Fair point.
I would like to see a lot of text. I would like to see a lot more up and coming animators try to establish this, but maybe YouTube or Amazon or Netflix might take those risks.
I think maybe the one channel that's doing that right now is actually Cartoon Network.
Cartoon Network's always taking that risk.
Yeah.
But they've mitigated that risk by doing things in 6 minute to 10 to 15 minute shorts initially for a year.
Yeah.
And see if there's any grab. And I think that's exactly what you need.
But Cartoon Network and Adult Swim in particular seem very willing to try out stuff that has no audience, first of all.
Right.
And they will let it fail. They'll like do a series and say, oh, well, that didn't work out. let's do another pilot of an entirely different show.
Exactly. And I think so, that's really good.
That's admirable. So yeah, like you said, maybe TV is where stuff is.
I think Disney's also it's beginning to take that risk because they have so many channels they can just throw around another series. One of them that's coming up is this shorts for Mickey, right? They're redoing Mickey in this weird, not weird, but a different animation style. And I think it could pan out or fail.
What is traditional or is CG?
Not traditional. I don't know. I think it's more a combination of traditional and CG, but the way that Mickey is drawn is not your typical Mickey.
It's like a
cross between a modern Mickey and a 1930s, 1950s Mickey.
Steamboat Willie style? Or
kind of. Let me see if I can find a picture so I can at least show my co-host what it looks like.
To be fair, Disney Animation Studios is trying to take a few risks with some of the stuff they're doing. Big Hero 6 is definitely not... That's not a well-established IP in the United States, right?
Sure, yeah.
But it is a well-established IP within Marvel, which they brought
it
in.
Is? Overseas, maybe.
I don't think in America.
no, not in America, but in Marvel itself, they have...
I guess they can bank on international sales to make up for that.
I'm just picking up.
Yeah, it is kind of weird to see where Disney is at.
So this is the new.
Well, I'm a little.
Mickey Mouse. At least a panel from the new Mickey Mouse cartoon.
Oh, that's totally new.
It's coming out like this month or something.
Hmm. Oh, we're looking at Mickey Mouse on a motorbike with some baguettes.
Right.
And, on the back, and it's
and then there's
it's very
one.
Strong line art, and it's very caricature. It's almost like the resembles a lowbrow.
Yeah.
Art movement too.
Maybe, sense. Right.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of like a modern versus a slash with the 1930s or 1940s, which is an interesting take. And I think this is a risk because it's not the new modern interpretation of Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Which,
what is that? That's going to be a featured film or?
No, it's a new series on Disney Channel.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to watching some of it. I think the jokes are a little different and it's a different interpretation of Mickey from they had through. They've been relying on Disney's Mickey Mouse Clubhouse for a while, which has done this 3D animation of it. And I think that's a lot for Disney Junior and their opening stuff. So this is, I think, bringing Mickey Mouse back up to, I would say, late elementary, early middle school children,
mm-hmm.
which is a change of pace.
Okay.
Well, you kind of need to reestablish him as a character every once in a while for each generation, I would assume.
To keep him relevant, because otherwise... People just aren't going to
like. Who's that?
Care. Yeah,
go to Disneyland, Mickey Mouse, whatever.
Well, I mean, that's the same kind of deal, right? They don't want to tarnish his image at all. He's like he's so important to their brand. That
which is
like,
why I'm interested in why they chose this type of animation.
It's not like he's totally absent. Like they do the Disney Playhouse stuff with him, right?
Not that he's absent. It's the animation style, which is totally different than what they've established.
They've given him a little bit of a creative license in some video games, Epic Mickey in Kingdom Hearts. So
yeah, that's
I don't know if there's
true.
Maybe they realize that any awareness is
fairly
better.
Limited audience compared to
definitely
you know what they would like. Ideally,
of course.
But yeah, no, it is pretty interesting to see what Disney animation has become today. When you consider like the whole CG department was initially just like a counter to Pixar,
right?
And now today is coming out with some of the most ambitious films,
right?
By comparison,
Brave came out of that, right?
No, Brave is Pixar.
Brave is Pixar.
Oh, Brave is Pixar. But Wreck-It Ralph
was
came out
the last
of that.
Film. Frozen is going to be the next one that comes out.
And then Big Hero 6, which looks really good, by the way. I'm looking forward to that. I'm trying to pick up the comics so that we can read it and kind of get caught up on the characters and the story in the world. But
right on.
Definitely very interesting setting. I like the Marvel universe that Disney's trying to pull in. I would love to see them take on Star Wars as well at a later point. But who knows if that'll ever come up.
Someone will do it.
They have. I mean, Cartoon Network's been doing it for about 10 years now.
Yeah, that was a Lucasfilm produced show, right?
It was Lucasfilm.
I think so.
Clone Wars?
Both of the Clone Wars series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
not a fan. The animation's not so great on this.
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
I haven't.
Really. Which Clone
Just
Wars?
Just the style.
There's two of them.
I don't know.
It is simplified, yeah.
There's the 2D version and the 3D version.
The 3D version.
The 3D version has better storylines, not as great as animation.
How much culture do you consume exactly? Because you seem to know about every TV show in existence.
Yeah, he's
You know, Disney Junior and Disney Kids. What? How do you know about
he's on top of
the
stuff,
the programming lineups for every network
stuff?
I take in a lot of information and it just never leaves my head, which is a problem.
I know, but most people don't even see these things in the first place, let alone retain it. Like you do.
Yeah, I mean, the sheer breadth of the stuff you see.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, from like the worst kids' entertainment
the
you
worst.
Can imagine.
Yeah.
To Downton Abbey and...
Right.
How do you do it?
that's exactly what I'm driving at.
I don't know. I just consume a lot of media. Like, I like to read a lot.
Clearly.
I like to watch a lot of stuff and
do you sleep?
I think the thing is he doesn't play video games anymore.
I gave up video games. My media, I've given up media, the video game media, and I kind of replaced that with a lot of YouTube stuff, a lot of Hulu, Netflix, a lot of TV stuff.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
So
you know, if you played less Final Fantasy, you too could be an expert on
Final Fantasy. What though? Which one would you give up?
What? 11.
11.
He didn't play Final Fantasy 11.
I think I only beat 13 three times, so that's not a waste of time. Yeah, I don't know what you mean.
If you played that two times fewer, you too could be an expert.
But then
I wouldn't
really have an optimized run. So it'd be like kind of incomplete.
That's the cost you pay. It's like, wait, am I going to watch The Little Mermaid 2 and 3?
Well, is that a cost? Or that seems like a win-win, actually.
I do love animation.
I'm just saying.
I will say that a lot of the stuff that I try to look at is animation. And I will take the worst and the best of media just to... I'll give any show a shot for 6 or 7 episodes.
Hey, it's useful in this context, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
You're just a font of knowledge over here. Being able to draw all kinds of comparisons. So it's compelling stuff.
I'm glad. Yeah.
I'm glad someone is doing it. Thank you for taking the hit.
That's okay. I will take the hit. There's a lot of cool stuff that's coming out. But thank you, Boss Breton, for joining us on this podcast.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
Quite entertaining.
No problem.
We would like you to come back for another one in the future.
For sure.
Please.
Nope.
Oh.
Look. Well,
oh, man.
I don't think so.
I don't
like you guys anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Man. So. I really would like to see him interpret more of the modern day 1990s animation. Cause...
Can't stand it. Oh. Wait, name one good movie from the 90s.
The Lion King.
Nope.
Oh, what, dude?
Anyway.
What?
This podcast is over. One last joke.
So that was the last appearance of...
No. Boss Breton will be back for sure for when we do Wreck-It Ralph. It's a must.
Right.
And maybe we'll have
a brother in Disney Animation Studios, so a little bit of insider knowledge.
He can give us some inside knowledge into Big Hero 6 when he does come on board with that.
When he comes on board?
When maybe we can bring him onto the podcast for that. It'd be very...
He's a jerk. Oh. So, no way.
Oh, man. So, sorry.
That's only
that.
Half a joke. For the record.
I would love to see more Paper Man-like things. So hopefully we'll get to see that kind of style of animation be propagated with the Phantom.
And that wraps up our podcast for tonight. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Kentucky. Buzz Red Dawn.
Thank you for having me.
Good night.
Good night.
Oh, Dinah. It's just a rabbit with a waistcoat and a watch.
Oh, my fairy whiskers. I'm late.
Now, this is curious. What could a rabbit possibly be late for? Please, sir.
I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello. Goodbye. I'm late.
It must be awfully important.